Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. We're so glad that you took the time to download us and are joining us. Every week, we bring you an interesting individual from the world of sports medicine and human performance, and this week is no exception. Actually, it's a return guest, and we're so glad to have him back. We have Mr. Carl Kapczynski with us, and if you don't remember his earlier podcast, I would encourage you to go back and listen to it because it was great fun. But Carl serves as the Texas A&M Assistant Athletic Director in charge of all athletic training. He was the 2005 NCAA Division I Athletic Trainer of the Year.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I didn't know that. That's great. He is a Texas A&M native. He graduated from here many years ago. He, in 1999 and 2009, Carl and his A&M staff received the Athletic Training Staff of the Year Award in the Big 12 Conference. Been active for many years in athletic training circles, and so we're so glad to have you back on the podcast, Carl.
Well, as always, I appreciate the opportunity, the invitation to come by and visit. It's always a pleasure of mine and fun to visit with everybody, and so I just look forward to sharing.
Yeah, Carl's one of these guys that I live vicariously through because when we watch football games and. You know, he gets to ride out on the field every once in a while. Not as much this year, though. We had we won't talk a lot about Johnny Football other than the fact that we're all thrilled. But injury-wise, we had a pretty good year, didn't we?
Well, I can say it now. Yes, we did. We kind of kept it zipped up. It's like pitching a no-hitter in a game. You know, you don't mention any of the stats as you go along. And as the season went on, we would look at each other and kind of give a little thumbs up as we went along through the season. But fortunately, we didn't have a lot of significant injuries that we weren't able to keep patched up.
Yeah.
And keep guys playing on the field. We did have a couple of really significant injuries, probably because nobody knew about them. They generally were practice injuries that occurred on some of our players who were being redshirted or that were on our practice squad. So, but we were fairly fortunate this year. And, you know, I think we go back as funny as we go back and start trying to evaluate those things, because those are critical elements in the success of your team in most cases. If you can keep your good players playing on the field and keep them healthy where they can participate at a high level, then you know that you got positive things happening for you. And, you know, Johnny's one of those guys. He was, you know, he's got so many positive characteristics about him being able to be a good athlete. But one of the things is that he somehow or another always is able to put himself in a position to not take big hits. He's a smart enough kid to know when he needs to run out of bounds, when he needs to slide, or when he needs to kind of configure himself to get away from that big blow. So that, you know, we cringed most all the time, and is obviously was acknowledged in the Missouri game. when he went down on the field, when you could hear a pin drop with 80 or 90,000 people in the stands, you're thinking, wow, this is pretty significant. And fortunately, he was able to bounce back for that and finished up the game.
Yeah. And I would bet, because you get to know these kids on a day-in and day-out basis, that you guys are rooting for them to stay healthy.
Oh, there's no question. Well, you know, we have to give a lot of credit to, you know, and if you haven't had him on, you need to have Larry Jackson on your podcast at some point in time. Larry is another former student, former athlete, and I had the privilege and pleasure of being able to help take care of Larry when he was a player, and he's gone on and positioned himself and credentialed himself to be a very knowledgeable strength conditioning coach that understands how to prepare, how to train student athletes, particularly in football, to help not only perform at a high level, to stay performing at a high level over an extended period of time, and from an athletic training and sports medicine's perspective, not to create injuries, but also how to prepare those student athletes not to develop injuries as we go along through the course of the season, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, and you said it's prevent injuries during training.
That's absolutely what it is.
I mean, that's the hard part, is when you have an athlete that gets hurt while he's practicing or while he's training, that takes him off the field.
Well, and you know, the big thing is, you know, injuries are a part of the sport. You know, we all know that that's, you know, I say that's our lifeblood, that's our job security, if you will. But bottom line is if we can eliminate or minimize the number of problems we have, the better off we're going to be across the board and across the season. And you know, I have to point my finger. And I have to give Coach Sumlin credit, too, for a lot of that, because the way he manages practice, mm-hmm. he has an incredible feel to know when it's time to stop, mm-hmm. when it's time to push a little bit more. And so it's one of those innate things that he has, characteristics, because he keeps time on the field himself. We don't have a clock that punches up periods and things like this.
Okay.
So we'll be going through, and all of a sudden we'll just stop practice because it's, you know what, that's enough. We're done.
We're done for the day.
And that's it. We quit.
Well, you know, and let's, I guess one of the reasons I want to have you back on, because I want to chat with you about some of the return to play issues that we've seen primarily in professional sports recently. And we can talk about some of these individually, but in particular, I want to talk about the relationship between the athletic training staff and the physicians that are involved, as well as the coaching staff. I mean, you have a big example in September where the Washington Nationals shut down Steve Strasburg a month early to save his arm. We've talked to those people on the podcast and got their views. Most recently, you have the issue in Washington with RG3, who played and got hurt. And there's been a lot of second guessing about that decision. Just this last weekend, we had Rob Gronkowski, tight end from the Patriots. That was had a broken arm and came back and broke his arm again in the first game back.
Right.
I mean, in general, and those are some big topics, but in general, how does that relationship work?
You know, the interesting thing about it is there's a lot of pressure placed on a lot of people, particularly when you're trying to generate success or you're being successful.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, and I think the big picture is you have to have people that are involved that are on a couple of different facets. In other words, the physicians have to be strong enough to be able to stand up and know what they're doing and take the call when they have to stand up for a situation, that type scenario. The athletic trainers, generally those are your first responders or the guys who are going to go out there and see and take care of the problem. You know, they have to be the advocate for the for the student athlete. And then, and the big thing is, like you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, the coaches have to have a great understanding and see the big picture and say, you know what, how is this going to impact us now, later, for the future?
Right.
How is this going to, and even more so from our perspective, because we're dealing with young student athletes,
right?
Okay,
right.
How is this going to impact them in the future? You know, we've got 2 or 3 or 4 years that we deal with these kids. Whereas, if they're really a great athlete and have potential to go on in the future, how's that going to impact them for that thing? Now, do all those things run through somebody's head when something happens? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But the big thing about it is you have to take each individual scenario and evaluate how it's going to come into play. And the big thing about it is, and I think that our staff, our doctors do a great, and our coaches as well, do a great job of looking out after the student athlete's best interest on the grand scheme of things.
Right.
If they can't, and I know Coach Sumlin, I can particularly speak to football. Coach Sumlin and his staff, he doesn't question if he relies on David and Matt Key and Dr. Bramhall and all of us to give him the information he needs, whether or not a kid can play. If he's out, okay, that's why you let me know when he's out. We'll go to the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's the reason he encourages all, make sure everybody knows, hey, you know what, you're just an injury away from playing.
Right.
Okay, those type of things.
Right.
So, our backup players have to be ready to go. And but again, fortunately, we didn't have a lot of those problems. But, it's interesting some of the scenarios that you brought up, and because we as a staff were always talking about some of those things. For instance, there was a lot of misinformation over the RG3 injury and whether or not Dr. Andrews allowed him to go back to play or cleared him to play. And, there was a lot going on. We can't go into all that stuff. But bottom line, there's a lot of misinformation about what was going on there. And the scenario with Strasburg, there's a lot of controversy. And I say, well, should they have done it? Should they have not have done it? Should they have just let him go ahead and pitch and those type of things like this? So those are always interesting scenarios. A lot of people always want to have a lot of feedback on it.
Sure. Yeah.
And the big thing about it is you got to know what's really going on the big picture. And I think the interesting thing that most people don't realize is that while you can generalize a lot of how things are being treated, everybody's different.
Right.
Everybody responds different.
Right.
And I think that has to be taken in consideration as far as when a person can come back or when they should come back or how they're going to manage it. There's a mental capacity to all this as well. So I think a lot of those, and most people don't understand that. They say, well, this guy came back after this period of time to do this, but it took this guy that much longer. Well, it's not always an exact science in that regard. We're all different people. how our bodies respond, how we heal is different. We talk to people all the time about, you know, sometimes people just have better protoplasm than others. Okay, if that makes sense. Some of them, you know, we have some players that do the same thing and they get injured a lot and they stay hurt a lot. Right. And then you get some guy, you'll never see them.
Yeah.
Okay, and why is that? They do the same thing, they do the same practice, but it's just how they're made up.
So, now, you brought up the Adrian Peterson thing. And everybody have just said, classic. You know, he just has done great this year, 9 yards from breaking the total rushing record, and 8 months ago he had a torn ACL.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's a very good example. And a lot of acknowledgement is going to say, well, what was different about that? He had an ACL repair. Well, there have been thousands of ACL repairs, and some of those athletes, you know, they don't respond and come back in the same level as what Adrian Peterson did.
Right.
So, you know, there's a classic example of a guy that was able to recover, and his body has the capability of healing faster than the average person.
I mean, he was also – it was amazing, is having gone through knee surgery myself, the psychological aspect. I mean, 6 months after my knee surgery, it was like I was just starting to get back into some of the things I was doing. And it was always in the back of your mind that you better watch out when you cut like this or run like this because you're going to get hurt again.
Absolutely.
And the fact that he was able to overcome not only the physical but the psychological aspect.
You know, I think a lot of things, it's interesting you bring that up too, because a lot of things that you have to overcome that. And it's a phase-in capability, probably as you well know.
Yeah.
It's a trial and error procedure you have to go through. All right, we're going to have to do these things.
Right.
And we're going to have to verify that, you know, you're able to do them and not going to sustain a significant injury. Can you ever tear it again? Absolutely. Did you tear it the first time when it was healthy? Sure you did. Okay. So we're going to try to minimize that. We're going to try to provide you with the capability to give you the protection you need while it's in the healing phase, okay, so that we make sure when it's all said and done, you're as good as you were when you started.
Right, right. And they didn't do that with Gronkowski.
You know, I don't know all the details about him.
And you know, we can't really second guess any of these because we certainly weren't there.
You're right.
From an outside observer perspective.
And you know, and the other thing, too, that people have to understand is, as I mentioned earlier, you have to think about the level of people you're dealing with, okay? Mm-hmm. Like in a Gronkowski situation, here's a young person that's playing. You know, this is his job. This is his livelihood, okay?
Right.
Now,
right.
If he makes it through the game, you know, his chance of making more money or good or whatever the case may be, and he's a critical element to their team, is he willing to accept the risk that he might refracture this thing if it's not totally healed,
right.
Okay? Well, those are tough decision. You know, I've heard of some other cases where people have made, it's all the thing about like the concussions and things like that go on, okay? Some point in time, they have the capability of making that decision. Now, has he put himself in jeopardy of having a long-term injury? Probably not,
right.
Okay? Now, is he obviously going to miss the next game? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. Now, had he not played in that game, would he have missed the game? Well, yeah, of course he did. So, was it worth the risk? Was it worth the try to see how it worked out?
Right.
Maybe it was, you know, we can argue that if we want to.
Well, we can say the same thing about RG3.
Correct.
Absolutely.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Now, did he put himself was he going to probably have knee surgery at the end of the year anyway? Probably so.
Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, again, we don't know all that. We don't know all those details. Is he in a situation where most cases he doesn't take as many blows? Now, granted, what makes him special is his capability to be able to run and maneuver and things like this. That's what makes him special. Okay. Now, was that eliminated? You know, I think we always evaluate an injury is how, if we were to put this person back, do they have the capability of protecting themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do they put themselves at risk of a quicker re-injury or a long-term re-injury or something along those lines? I think those are the stair steps that you have to go through.
But, Carl, as we talk about people like RG3, you've had the situation where you have an athlete who you think is injured, who's standing there going, I'm fine, put me back in. I mean, that was widely reported that he told that to Coach Shanahan and the training staff. He said, I'm fine, I've got to play, I want to play. How do you overcome that? I mean, concussion is one thing. We'll talk about concussions in a minute, but when you're looking at an orthopedic injury like that.
You know, that's an interesting question because I think there's two ways you have to look at it. Number one is, you have to know the integrity and the character of the person you're dealing with, okay? In some cases, you can trust what they say because you've had enough dealing with this. And in particular, I would say until you know that, until you've been able to determine what their thought process and what their character is, I think you have to always err on the side of conservatism, okay? But there are some players that, you know, from history and you know from dealing with them, if they were to go down on the field, You let them stay there for a little while because they're going to get up.
Right.
Okay, and you know that. And you got other ones, when they go down, you better hurry up and get your butt out there in a hurry because there's something wrong. because they don't do that.
Right.
Okay. So in a case like this, yes, you're right. Players will come up to you and ask, "Are you okay?" And they'll most all of them will say, "Oh yeah, I'm fine." Okay. Well, you generally will determine over the course of time in dealing with them whether or not you know they're giving you an honest answer. And I'll give you a classic example. When Johnny hurt his knee, one of the questions, you know, when I got, I think it was actually on TV copy, I actually went up to Johnny and told him, I said, "Look, son, let me tell you something." I said, it's important for you, no matter how much you want to play or you think you need to be in the game, it's important for you at this point in time to be honest with us. If your knee is bothering you, we need to know, okay? And I said, if you're not honest, you're not hurting anybody but yourself,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And he looked me square in the eyes. He says, I'm okay. My knee is not a problem. I am fine, okay? You know what? I knew he was telling me the truth. Okay, mm-hmm. And because now did he get scared when he first went when he went down there? Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, as it all said and done, he did not have significant injury. Okay, he got contorted in an unusual way, and he got apprehensive.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So with that being said, you know, most of the kids, if you can get them down in a situation like that, they'll be straight with you and they'll understand it. And so they know that you're trying to look out after their best interest, even if they want to play. The competitive kids are the ones that are the most challenging. And, you know, the ones we've talked about, particularly not even outside of injury, about illness problems and things like that, particularly like heat illnesses, you know, the ones that we worry about the most are the kids that sit there. They're, you know, they've been sick all night, throwing up all night. They want to be on the practice field. They're the overachievers and that type of thing. And then all of a sudden you put them back and then, you know, they won't tell you there's something wrong with them. They go out on the field and all of a sudden they've compromised their whole system and put themselves at risk of being a fatality. So with that being said, you always have to be conscious of watching those guys.
And there are examples out there like that.
Absolutely.
Of former players that have passed away because they were compromised when they started playing and maybe they got overheated in particular.
And it took a lot faster than what they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of players over the course of time that we've dealt with that have come very close to being significant concerns because they weren't straight with us. They weren't forthcoming with problems that they were having that compromise them being able to go out on the field. And so, we're pretty conscious of all that as best we can. And so that's the reason we have to try to put some other things in places to try to help monitor some of those things. And, you know, most of the time, the coaches have been real good about, you know, if they see a player that's not doing right or acting the way they normally would, they're going to raise the flag up to you as well. So,
yeah. And this comes back to, like you said, very subjective. You have to know the player. Know their personality.
I think, you know, if you don't, it's like I said, you know, it's like when we host camps and things like this, we don't know these students that are here.
No,
we don't know the athletes. So, you know, they may be the toughest kids in the world, or then again, maybe they're not. It doesn't matter. Okay, bottom line is if they present with any problem, in most cases, we're going to shut them down or we're going to treat them on a conservative basis because we just don't know how they're going to be able to manage these things. And, you know, the question is, you know, some people's pain tolerance is a lot higher than others,
right.
You know, and you say, well, you know, I put him back. He can deal with it, but maybe we were going to put him in a situation where he's going to injure himself a little bit further. So with that being said, that's a bad thing. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, most times in cases like that, where we don't know the student athletes, we're always going to err on that side.
Yeah. You know, a thought just struck me as you were talking here. We know there's a lot of competition on the field, or the basketball court, whatever the teams are. How much collaboration is there between athletic training staffs that, say, you're visiting and you're playing at LSU and you go there and you have an injury? How much collaboration is there between the staffs? I know you have the primary care responsibilities, but how do they help out? How is that normally handled?
Well, I can say, you know, obviously just the first round of the SEC has been great. I know in the Big 12, I mean, it was like a big band of brothers across the board. I mean, there was no issues. We had a couple of scenarios where we had some kids that had significant injuries, and their staffs were, you know, instrumental in us being able to manage the care of our student, okay? Mm-hmm. Whether it be getting him off the field, whether it be getting him to the healthcare facility where they needed to go, whether it be there making sure that they got transportation provided for him, okay? And it wasn't even our location. And we'd like to think we would reciprocate in that form or fashion, because fundamentally, while we both want to win the contest, bottom line is if we can take care of the health and welfare of a student that's been injured, that's what our jobs are, whether or not, no matter who we're working for.
Right.
So the collaboration has been great.
I mean, I think that's something that people don't think about. is that while there's competition on the field, there has to be teamwork behind between the teams to make some of these things happen appropriately.
There have been rare occurrences where situations have happened where I felt like that maybe we just kind of got left hung out to dry, mm-hmm. and you know, we're in a situation where we don't know where anything is, those type of things. But 30 years I've been doing, I can maybe count on less than one hand, a couple of fingers, those times situations occurred. We had a situation occur here. We played University of Texas about 4 years ago, in which we had a player down. They had a player down from a collision that occurred on the field. Mm-hmm. All right, their player in it had a suspected neck injury.
Wow.
Okay, well, so, you know, the interesting thing is that they had a plethora of physicians on their sideline who we were trying to enhance what they were trying to do or facilitate what they were trying to do. But they had so many people that were arguing with each other on their side on how it was supposed to be managed.
Oh, really? Oh.
So that's what actually created a bigger problem. It was not what we were trying to do to help them. It's what they were trying to do of trying to decide what needed to be done.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then when it was all said and done, my colleague at the University of Texas, and we had a little conversation about how some things that we attempted to do that we shouldn't have, only because we tried and we should have never done it to start with. So we were able to establish some new parameters on some radiology things that we shouldn't do in our facility that we tried to, and it didn't work. Now, it didn't create a problem at the time, but it could have.
Right. So, well, yeah, like I said, I don't think many people think about that kind of collaboration that has to go on.
No, it's great. Yeah. You know, athletic trainers are great people, and they really care about the people that they work with, no matter who they are, on which side they are on.
If they don't, the whole business is in trouble, isn't it? Let's turn for a few minutes while we've got a few minutes left to talk about concussions a little bit, because concussions really kind of fall into a different area than normal orthopedic injuries. I mean, this concussion is one where the athlete really may not have a sense of what's going on. I mean, I continue to think back a year ago to when Colt McCoy, playing for the Browns, got whacked, and they, you know, and you could tell from TV that he was concussed, but yet they put him back in a play later, and then later they said, well, the athletic training staff hadn't seen him get hit and hadn't even looked at him, and he was like, I as an observer, as an interested observer, I can't imagine how that would have happened.
You know, it ended up creating a whole bunch of new procedures for them in the NFL, in which now they hire generally an athletic trainer, somebody to be a spotter in the box.
Really?
To watch the game and report down to the field if they see somebody that has a potential injury or problem, to make sure that somebody's noted it.
Really?
Yes. Because there are several colleagues that I have that do that. I know the Cash Birdwell, used to be the athletic trainer a long time at SMU, is the spotter for the Cowboys games in their box. So it's.
Is it feasible that none of the medical staff saw a hit like that?
I find it hard to believe, just because there have been cases, obviously, where I've been watching one part of the field and maybe the play was here and something on the backside happened that you didn't see.
Yeah.
But somebody did.
Yeah, somebody saw that somewhere.
Okay, somebody did. Yeah. Now, you know, maybe because in the college game, maybe our staffs are a little bit bigger in some cases than they are in the NFL. Yeah. Okay, so because generally they just have maybe one or two staff people, period, that are there, and then a couple of doctors that are going to work with them. So maybe it's possible. Anyway, we'll assume that it is, because that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I think that, you know, the biggest issue you always run into, concussions are always an ongoing challenging thing, and there's been so much attention brought to it by the media and by a lot of other different lawsuits and things. I know there's some ongoing lawsuits, particularly in the NFL, that have impacted. And I will say across the board that I think college and universities, and even in some cases at the high school levels, have handled and managed concussions the appropriate way on the side of conservatism. The problem you always run into is that student-athlete who is a borderline case in some cases that has become a critical case because they did go back into the game.
Right, right.
And so, you know what, we probably will from time to time still have some of those, because some kids can do a great job of, you know, covering it up for a period of time. Okay, and you may not know the difference. So you got to decide where you pull the trigger on a kid one way or the other. It's interesting that you brought it up too, because I had a conversation with my colleague at Bryan High School here just yesterday, and we were talking about that. And And, you know, here in the state of Texas, they've mandated all kinds of rules and policies and things that have to be implemented in, as far as allowing kids when they can go back to play from concussion. Well, you know, they had already established a set of seven steps in which they were going to have to follow before a kid could return from a concussion, even before the state had ever got involved. But as a result of the attention and the coach, now the coaches think that they all of a sudden have created all these new policies and procedures, which they've always had to begin with.
Right.
But now the attention has been brought to them to start with. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah,
so,
sure.
So now
it was there. We just didn't realize
that's
it. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so all of a sudden now it's just like, you know, one of the things you and I were talking about earlier is trying to make sure that we, you know, we do a better job of educating our coaches,
right,
okay, about what things and how these things work and managing those things, and if they're going to hire somebody to do the job that we do, then they need to trust what they're trying to do for them,
right,
and that type scenario. So the concussions are always an ongoing thing, and I think, you know, we had our share of them this year, and I think we, knock on wood, we did a good job of managing those things. We haven't had no secondary problems or issues that have come up out of those. And I think that one thing that David and the rest of the staff have done a really good job with are trying to educate the student athletes that, you
right.
know what, we have to know.
Right.
We
right.
need to be aware, because you know what, we're here for you and for your health and safety. We can't help you if we don't know that there's a problem.
Right.
Okay. The kid that gets up and staggers around the field, that's a no-brainer. You can figure that one out.
It's a good pun, by the way. No-brainer, yeah.
So when you come back, when you get the kid that comes back to the sideline, he's dinged, he's sitting over on the bench, you know, you don't know what's going on. Then all of a sudden, you know, maybe that kid put himself at risk.
Right.
So I think they've done a really good job of trying to make sure that we educate the kids that, hey, look, if you don't feel right, if something's happened to you, you got to let us know. And we've had and it's been very successful. I think the kids have been very forthcoming. They know that we're not trying to hold them out, that we're trying to do what's in their best interest.
Right, right. And what's interesting to me, as I've read and learned about some of this, is that the response is variable. People have different, for lack of a better term, concussion tolerance. You have some people that will have a hit and they'll get it popped back up, and you'll have others that will go, you know, they're out.
They're gone. Yeah, they're gone.
They're gone. There's so much variability in it.
Well, it's kind of like the same thing we talked about, it how different people's bodies handle different things. You know, I got asked a question the other day about, he says, why does it look like we have so many of this injury or concussions? How are these things? And there was a lot of fear. I had one colleague propose to me that they were concerned that over the course of time that the sport of football would probably be totally eliminated because of the way they were going from the injury perspective and the fact that you can't protect the players anymore from injury. You know, and one person was sitting there talking about how, you know, from a concussion perspective, we need to do more with the helmets. Okay, you know, helmets is not what prevent concussions. Okay, they certainly help, and nobody would go out and play without them. But even though I suggest,
no one wants to go back to leather helmets.
Huh? Well, but you know what? You think about it. In some cases, two lines of thought here. Number one, you know, if you look at the evolution of the sport, okay. They started playing without them.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there were plenty of concussions.
Okay.
So they put helmets on them to prevent head injuries. And then all of a sudden, we start getting all these facial injuries because they didn't have face masks. So they start putting bars on the helmet so they can prevent facial injuries. Okay. But what happens is over the course of time, the evolution of the helmet, as it's gotten better, the players have decided to use it as a weapon.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's become a critical element in the participation of the game as a weapon.
Right.
Okay. So we don't really want to take the helmet away to prevent them from using it as a weapon. But what we have to do is that we have to do a better job of educating the kids. And things are already in place to do that. We have to be able to make them understand they cannot tackling and playing the game. The helmet should not be a part of it.
Right.
Okay. The helmet is a protective piece of equipment
right.
that is there to prevent you from having a problem, provided you don't use it to be the problem.
Right. Right.
So we have to do a better job of enforcing the rules, of having our coaches coach and teach contact without the helmet.
Right.
Okay. What if we took the helmet off and had everybody go hit each other? You think it would be the same?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Okay. But it's along that mentality that what we have to do to teach the game, we have to, You know, and let's football is a contact sport. That's what it is, and that's not going to change. Okay, but the other issue that we have to come into play is that, you know, when we were younger and the people that were surrounding us, I tell people all the time, when I was in school in the, you know, mid-70s, our players at Texas A&M, our offensive line averaged probably about 260 pounds, okay?
Wow.
And we had an average size offensive line. We had two massive players that played tackle for us. One weighed 280 pounds and the other weighed 270. Massive
they
players.
Were
massive. They were two of the biggest players in college.
Yeah.
There's not a person on our offensive line right now that probably weighs less than 300 pounds.
Right.
And we just got through doing some testing yesterday in regards to, you know, some of the conditioning and stuff, and they were running some 40s, and we had a couple 300-pound guys that could run a 4.940.
Wow.
Okay, so
that's moving a lot of mass really quickly.
So,
yeah.
And my point being now is that over the course of time, what we've been able to do is we've been able to take bigger masses,
right,
increase their speed and their strength,
right,
okay, so that we could generate bigger collisions, okay. But you know our casing that our brain sits in hasn't gotten any thicker, at least even though we argue that sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, but the protection part of it hasn't changed any.
Yeah.
Okay, the capabilities of our bodies to protect itself, the bones aren't really any bigger or thicker. And then some people that obviously is different, but on the grand scheme of things, so what we have is when we have collision, we have train wrecks going on out there.
Right.
We got big, fast people that are just slamming into people, and you know your body can only handle so much. So we've evolved into this, you know, this situation, and now we've got to figure out a way. You know, the game is fun. It's fun to watch.
Right.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
And
but maybe we're coming to the end of that era where, you know, the helmet first kind of tackling. I mean, I don't ever remember that much until I think Cliff Harris from the Dallas Cowboys was always pile driving in. Bill Bates was the same way. Again, I followed the Cowboys growing up. And, you know, that was, I guess, mid-70s, somewhere in that ballpark. And then that's now what you see. You know, people were glorified when they made those kind of hits.
Well, and I hope you're right. I still see, you know, you still look, and I see from time to time you watch the game. And it's a tough job for the officials because that's an area that they've got to be actively involved in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They have to be able to enforce that, okay? And, you know, in most cases it's easy to enforce a horse collar tackle because it's easy to see. Okay? But the thing about it is a lot of times, you know, you'll get a kid that will go in and spear a kid and just, you know, they'll go head-to-head contact on them, and it happens so fast that you don't see it. We've grown so accustomed to seeing it.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
That we don't notice the difference.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's where we've got to, I think, to help alleviate some of these problems. Now, we're not going to eliminate them. We'll alleviate some of them.
Right.
Those are the areas we have to go down.
Yeah, and it's – well, you know, and equipment changes. I'm sure there'll be some more changes in the helmet. But, again, like you said, the brain still moves around in
there.
That's correct. No matter what kind of helmet you have on.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I look at shoulder pads. You look at films of football from the mid-'80s, and these massive shoulder pads these guys wore, you know. And now you look at the shoulder pads, and even for the biggest guys, they don't look to be that big.
You know,
but they're obviously better.
They are. And, well, particularly, you know, the foam and the padding that they put in them can absorb more shock and things like this. So there's been a lot of great research that's been done and provided. And what's a little bit disheartening from my perspective is that, you know, we used to pad up, or there used to be rules to make sure these kids were padded up really good and things like this. Was over the course of time now, the players just don't want to wear any pads. It's hard to get it. You know, we say these players are supposed to wear thigh pads. Most of the time, all they do is wear is a shell, which doesn't pad them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, granted, you know, we don't see a lot of thigh injuries. Okay,
right.
and those type of things. And but it's the same scenario. What we tried to do is they've tried to streamline, you know, their bodies from the pants. So basically, all they wear, their protection, is just wearing a pair of pants out there is what it amounts to. Okay. So you know, those are issues and areas that don't. Haven't really come into play because we don't see that many injuries there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's some enhancement that still can be done, that will be done, but the, you know, the end all is, I think we have to change the mentality of the game back to the way it was a little bit before.
Yeah. But as you said, there's always going to be injuries. I mean, recently there was I watched the 30 on 30 documentary on Bo Jackson. If you don't know Bo, and if you haven't seen it, I'm listening, talking to the audience, you should watch that. A misstep, and he had hip problems, had to have a hip replacement. And it's one of those things you look at on film and you go, that really hurt him?
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that it didn't
look like anything.
Yeah, the guy run through walls normally,
right?
You know, and
right.
just one bad step during a tackle.
Right.
It was hip problems. So,
Well, you see that all the time, too, and you say, well, and this is – sometimes you call it good luck. I don't know. You see a kid sometimes, or you see a play where a guy – it'll put it in slow motion, and a player will fall into a kid's knee or something, and it just looks like it probably just should have ripped it all to pieces.
Yeah.
And he gets right back up, bounces around like nothing's wrong with it. And then you'll see another thing that'll – some it'll just be a real quick blow, and boom, he did. Yeah. Maybe he didn't even get hit. Maybe he planted and twisted and tore everything up.
Wow. So there's you're always going to have a job, Carl.
Well, you know, I'm not looking for business, okay? But, you know, we're always prepared when it comes our way.
Yeah, that's true. And I will say, and this is a plug for athletic trainers out there everywhere, if you're a weekend warrior like me, or a recreational athlete, and you get hurt, people say, where do you go? I say, find an athletic trainer. Well, because they're used to dealing with athletic injuries.
Well, and I will tell you this, that, you know, my son is an outreach athletic trainer, works for one of the local hospitals, and all the local hospitals now have or employ athletic trainers.
Excellent.
Okay. So they're available if, as you mentioned, if you need to see one, there's one out there at one of the local hospitals that can help take care of you.
Yeah. If you go in to see someone and you realize that they're not an athlete, I would go someplace else.
Thank you for that.
That's just me.
I appreciate anyway. That.
So we really have had a great conversation here. We're at the end of our time, though. What's the take-home message would you give people from this podcast?
Well, if anything I would have to say is that particularly in youth sports or any type of youth athlete is that the key element is, competitive spirit is a great thing.
Yeah.
But you have to use education and common sense as you go along with that. And I think if nothing else is that we're preparing our kids, and one of the things that we have to do is I've referred to this numerous times during this talk is the fact that, you know, we have to make sure that everybody understands that we educate. The coaches have to be educated, knowing what to look for. Our student athletes have to be educated to know when they need to report things, okay? And then, you know, as they need to know, we need to have an understanding of how to teach the games and the events and activities that we're in so that we can try to do a better job of taking care and providing the best health care that we can for the people out there and to make it enjoyable for everybody. You know, us and the fans, you know, we're not hitting each other, but, you know, we want to see them do all that, but we can do that in a safe manner.
Right. That's a fabulous take-home message. Carl, thank you for being with us today. Had a great time.
Thanks for having me again. I always enjoy it. I'm sorry I talked too much.
No, you did great. You did great. And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to download us and sharing your life with us a bit today. Be sure and go online and write some comments if you like the talk or not. We've had some past podcast speakers who've actually had really good discussions with some of our listeners, and so we'd encourage you to do so. So until next week, when you'll join us, and we'll have another interesting individual from the world of sports medicine like Carl here, we hope that you have an active and healthy week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, and our music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.